KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
You listen, if you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, the man behind the new and already controversial NBC comedy, Outsourced. But first, the Hollywood News banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
I'm joined by John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. John, recently back from the Telluride Film Festival.
And a lot of people who were in Telluride, Colorado, are now in Toronto at the Toronto International Film Festival. It's that time of the year.
And those of us at Toronto are going to be seeing some of the films that John saw at Telluride, right, John?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot more movies in Toronto than there were in Telluride, but some of the higher profile movies, Darren Aronofsky's movie about a ballerina, Black Swan, will be in Toronto. The King's Speech, which is a look at King George VI's stuttering problems, will be in Toronto. Ben Affleck's movie, The Town, which wasn't in Telluride, will be in Toronto. I mean, it's a really good lineup. And you'll get to see Aaron Ralston amputate his arm. I think you can sit through that, can't you, Kim? And Danny Boyle's new movie, 127 Hours.
You know, I had trouble with the child's eyeball gouging in Slumdog Millionaire, which was the last one from Danny Boyle, so I may have to avert my gaze. But John, you know, there's a lot of talk about these festivals, particularly Toronto, and to some degree Telluride, of course, as the Oscar launching pad. Is it overblown?
I think it is a little bit. I mean, it's overblown somewhat in the media. The festivals play almost a triple role. First of all, they kind of establish the critical momentum for a movie, regardless of whether or not it's going to go on to be nominated for an Oscar. So critics start to embrace movies. They start to get behind them. They start building momentum. Then there's the whole thing. It's like, is Ben Affleck directed, has he made an Oscar movie in The Town, which is a whole nother conversation. And then, especially in Toronto, there's a big press media focus of, because since there's so many bigger studio films there, you have to go see this next big film. It's the remake of Let the Right One In, not an awards movie, but something that a lot of people might want to go see. So I think there's three things going on at once. And unfortunately, sometimes the Oscar handicapping overshadows the quality of the films or just the experience of going to a festival.
Well, there is some reason for all of this awards hysteria, because Slumdog Millionaire came out of absolutely nowhere, it seemed, at Telluride when Fox Searchlight picked it up. And Hurt Locker also seemingly came out of nowhere when it was in Toronto and Summit.
That same year. Yeah, the same year.
And it won the following year at the Oscars, having been released the following year by Summit. So, of course, inevitably, there is that Oscar thing. But the other side of the coin is a lot of times there's a sort of festival hysteria. And this is true at Sundance, too, where movie lovers gather and watch these movies and think they're fabulous. And then they get out into the real world and just die an ignominious death.
Exactly. Right?
So it's no
Oscar
guarantee.
Oscar chances began and ended in Canada. I think yes. That's absolutely true. And I think that's why it's a double-edged sword. I mean, you can actually start talking about how well-received these movies are going to be. But if you only see them in terms of their awards potential, I think in some ways it's a disservice to the film because it ignores what the movie is really about.
Now, one movie that probably will not be up for Oscar, at least in the major categories, is the fourth Pirates of the Caribbean. But we've had some news coming out of Disney about the marketing of that film, which I reported in The Hollywood Reporter. And it really plays into a much bigger story about the complete makeover of every aspect, it seems, of television and filmed entertainment at the Walt Disney Company. We have talked before on this show about how Disney replaced Dick Cook, the head of the studio, with an outsider, Rich Ross, who came from cable TV. He then pretty much gutted the film marketing department and hired an outsider, M.T. Carney. And now, after a couple of disappointing Jerry Bruckheimer movies opened over the summer, specifically The Sorcerer's Apprentice and Prince of Persia, they are not quite entrusting Pirates of the Caribbean to MT Carney in the marketing department. They have brought in a veteran marketer.
No, and obviously that's an incredibly important movie to them. I think the interesting question is what's going to happen on Tron? I mean, I think Disney has as much invested as Tron as they do on Pirates of the Caribbean. And whenever a movie doesn't work well, they never blame the filmmakers. They always blame the marketing people. So, you know, other studios have brought in outside consultants. But when you bring in an outside consultant on such an important brand as Pirates, I think it does send interesting signals.
But more broadly, this is not the only area in which Disney is trying newcomers to a given job. They've just put in a new head of their ABC network, who comes from the cable side, and he's now running the television network and production entity. And they don't have a replacement for, but they've gotten rid of the head of news.
Yeah, David Weston, who has been running ABC News, which Disney owns for a long time, has suddenly resigned. So the changes at Disney continue fast and furious. If only they had Fast and Furious as a franchise.
I'm sure they would like that. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. The new NBC sitcom, Outsourced, premieres next week on Thursday night after The Office, and that's a pretty good spot. This show is a fish-out-of-water comedy featuring an American sent to run a call center in India. He works for a company selling cheap novelty items like fake blood, patriotic mugs, and those cheesehead hats, you know, the kind that the Green Bay Packers fans wear at football games.
The key to our success is selling add-ons. You know, somebody calls to buy a product, we suggest a related product for them to buy as an add-on. So let's say somebody calls and they want to buy this, Green Bay Packers colors. I want to suggest that they also buy a cheese head.
What is a cheese head?
You put this on when you're rooting for the Packers. Yeah. All right. Let's not make fun of each other's headgear, right? I mean, you guys have got some pretty crazy-looking hats yourselves.
Even before its premiere, NBC's Outsourced has come under attack on the internet and at the latest gathering of TV critics for allegedly promoting stereotypes in its portrayal of the Indian call center staff. Some folks are also wondering whether a comedy based on outsourcing American jobs overseas will seem particularly funny in today's economy. Our guest today is the main creative force behind the show, Ken Kwapis. He's a film and television director who shot the template-setting pilots for some great sitcoms, including The Larry Sanders Show, The Bernie Mac Show, and the American version of The Office. Outsourced is the first series he's developed from the ground up.
I'd done the pilot for The Office, and I was really eager to... I mean, I love workplace stories. I love, you know, some of my favorite films are workplace stories, like The Shop Around the Corner, for instance, this unimpeachably great film. And so I was on the hunt for something fresh in that genre, and I saw, I think it was maybe 2006, I saw the independent film Outsourced, directed by a guy named John Jeffcoat and written by John Jeffcoat and George Wing. And I just fell in love with this film. It was a wonderful film. And so I approached them and asked them if they wanted to continue their film's life in another form as a television series.
And they surprisingly said, they said yes.
Yeah, what were they thinking?
I don't know.
So I took the idea to NBC, mm-hmm. and I pitched it.
I have to ask you, who did you pitch it to? There's been a lot of changing of the
guard
at NBC.
Well, I pitched it to the previous regime, to Ben. You know, Ben.
Ben Silverman, obviously, who had a lot to do with bringing The Office to this country, right?
Absolutely. And he totally got it. I mean, my pitch was very simple. I said, wherever you go on the planet, an office is an office. And the same, you know, petty foibles, you know, exist, whether it's, you know, a paper company in Scranton or a call center in Mumbai. And I also, part of my pitch was that I love the idea of doing a show that, at the end of the day, is actually about America, but America as seen through the eyes of everyone outside America. And this actually took a few years to get made. You know, we went down the road for a while and didn't quite have a script that the network was happy enough about. There was a regime change. Angela came aboard.
Angela Bromstead, yeah.
And she, you know, totally got into it and wanted to basically redevelop it. We invited this wonderful writer, Robert Borden, to come aboard and do a pass at the pilot. And then in the middle of all that, this little film came along called Slumdog Millionaire, mm-hmm. and suddenly NBC thought, well, maybe Americans are not so afraid of stories about Indians after all. And so it was quite a long and winding road to get there.
So there was an initial feeling that, you know, India, they won't relate to India?
Well, actually, now that I say that, no. In fact, the surprising thing was that NBC never felt that way.
Right. Well, but there has been an issue about whether this is going to come across as – I mean, there's already been buzz on the internet. It's racist. It's anti-developing country. I mean, and there is a built-in thing of American going to be the boss of all these people who are Indian.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, it's a story about a culture clash. So, I mean, it's not really – I don't know. I can't imagine a story about a culture clash that doesn't deal on some level with stereotypes. Are we perpetuating stereotypes? Absolutely not. I mean, I think that when I read these comments,
you mean on the internet?
On the internet, and I try my best not to. But I mean, the group that actually hasn't raised this issue are Indian Americans who've seen the pilot, who actually find it quite delightful and very relatable.
Did you test it with, did you bring in groups and say, how's this sit with you?
Oh, because I need to know. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I'm just asking.
Yeah.
Oh, no. In fact, the feedback we've gotten was really positive from Indian Americans. There's also this overwhelming feeling of wow, how great is it that there's going to be so many actors of South Asian descent on a network television show.
Were you thinking carefully that you couldn't do what has been done in Prince of Persia, where there's somebody playing Pakistani, playing Indian or something, where there's going to be some sort of, it's not real and it's fake?
All of the call center workers are played by actors of South Asian descent. And as best as one can in a half-hour television show, you want it to feel as credible as possible. We're shooting here
certainly
in Los Angeles. There's definitely a couple of kind of hot-button things that have come up. I mean, one of them is, does the comedy depend on ethnic, stereotyping? Well, I mean, if anything, it's about an American who is ill-informed or about India. So, in fact, there is comedy, but it's at the expense of Americans and their, again, rather uninformed attitudes. But I would say the show's, attitude towards the Indian call center characters could not be more affectionate. And the other hot-button issue, of course, is outsourcing itself,
right,
which, makes people angry. And there are some people who seem to feel that Americans or middle Americans, won't want to see a show about outsourcing. And one of the things we've tried to do in setting up the series is outsourcing is a point of departure for the series. I mean, nobody's going to tune into a show once a week to watch a show about issues.
Outsourcing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Or to watch, see a comedy about economics. Right. I mean, they'll watch week after week because they fall in love with the characters and hopefully they're funny. But I do get comments from people Middle America will never go for that. And one of the things that people forget is that, to get a, television show on the air is not a simple thing. I mean, networks don't program a show, on a whim. This pilot, like any pilot, went through a pretty grueling series of tests.
Focus groups.
And in fact, I would say the only reason we're talking about this right now is because it tested well.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with film and television director Ken Kwapis. His latest TV project is the new NBC comedy Outsourced. It's about an American sent to India to oversee a call center. It's the only new comedy on NBC's lineup this fall, and even before it premieres next week, Outsourced has created some controversy with critics who question whether it promotes stereotypes in its depiction of Indians working at the call center. I assume the hands were ringing a little bit like at NBC, is this going to be considered racist? Is this going to be considered patronizing to the other culture? Is this going to push those buttons? That must have been brought up at NBC, right?
Well, oddly enough, it's the opposite is the case. I think that NBC feels like a good comedy should push buttons. I mean, I can point to several episodes of The Office. In fact, some I've directed where, Steve Carell's character says the most blatantly racist and homophobic things. I mean, I think if you're not provoking somebody, you're not doing a good job if you're doing a comedy. The thing is, no one on the creative team, no one at the network ever thinks of the show as being patronizing towards Indians. In fact, it's just the opposite. I mean, the goal of the show is that it's about going halfway around the world to find out that the people you're now working with are basically no different than the coworkers you had back in America.
So how did you approach the tone? One of the journalists at the press tour that just happened in Beverly Hills, where you were introducing these shows to critics, this question was, I watched the pilot with my son who's 17, and afterwards I asked him, is this hilarious or offensive? And he said, Dad, it's hilarious because it is offensive. And you mentioned a little bit of that in context of The Office.
Well, again, I think that, there's you're not doing your job as a comedy director unless you provoke someone now and then. But having said that, there's a big tonal difference between a show like Outsourced and The Office. The Office, frankly, the workers at Dunder Mifflin are all, you know, vaguely depressed, and you feel like they don't really enjoy their job. And the big difference in Outsourced is that the call center workers, and this is true of the call center phenomenon, they are happy to be there. They are strivers. They know that these jobs are coveted. It's really, you know, there's this burgeoning middle class. It's changing the way people behave. It's changing the way men and women behave with each other. So there's I would say Outsourced has a much more upbeat tone.
So it's a little sweeter than maybe The Office or lighter?
I think so. I mean, it doesn't mean that there isn't room for, you know, some provocative things. I mean, I think that we're always going to try and tackle some, you know, culturally sensitive stuff.
Right.
For me, I have such affection for all these characters. There's not a mean-spirited, you know, moment in the pilot. My hope is that you're rooting for these characters. Now, you may say, well, why do I want to root for characters who've taken American jobs away? Well, the answer is because once you get to know them, you'll realize they're no different than you and me. I mean, if comedy can do anything, it's that it can break down the, you know, certain kinds of barriers, you know, between people of different backgrounds.
While Outsourced is the first TV series Ken Kwapis developed from the beginning, he's had plenty of experience in the world of TV comedy. He's been a go-to director on some very popular single-camera comedies. Those are the ones that aren't shot in front of an audience with three cameras. He directed many episodes of Malcolm in the Middle, earning a producer credit on that show, and he helmed the pilots of The Larry Sanders Show, The Bernie Mac Show, and the American version of The Office. Naturally, he's also directed the pilot of his new show, Outsourced. Now, the director of a TV pilot plays an important role. He or she has to pull together something good enough to convince network executives to say yes and order the show to series. Once that happens, the pilot has to be good enough to convince advertisers to buy commercial time, and it has to impress the critics, who can help launch the show with the audience. We asked Ken Kwapis about the impact the director has in creating a television pilot.
Part of the job of setting up the show is not only the casting, but the look, the tone of the show. And what you're trying to do is also create a kind of template that other directors can follow. And not simply follow, but, I mean, you're only as good as other directors are. I mean, it's sort of like you want other directors to come in and take what you've set up and really shine.
Right.
And that's what makes a successful show. For instance, in the case of the Bernie Mac show.
Right.
I worked very closely with Larry Wilmore. Now, Bernie Mac is primarily known for his stand-up.
Or was then.
Was then. And actually, I think he kind of resisted television because he didn't want to do anything in a multi-camera format. He wanted to do something that was a little more low-key, behavioral, observational, not shtick. So a lot of what Larry and I did in preparing the pilot was trying to figure out how to – a lot of talk about tone. And obviously, Bernie's, you know, whole career is kind of based on this idea of – that he could say things that people feel but would never have the guts to say out loud. But my job was to try and figure out a tone for the show where everything kind of felt like we were just sort of eavesdropping on a family. And even when Bernie, like, talks to the camera, those sort of signature
America.
So-called, you know, America, I just wanted it to be as utterly conversational as possible. And in the pilot, I just sat next to the lens. I kind of leaned my head against the lens and just said, let's have a chat. And we conversed about various things. And at a certain point, he'd just sort of segue into the scripted piece. So there was just a kind of a wonderfully intimate quality to it. That was my hope, was to create a kind of intimate feeling that then others would be able to explore and but keep that tone.
Right. Here's a clip from the Bernie Mac show pilot where the late, great Bernie Mac is talking to the camera.
Damn. This is a good cigar. You can tell a good cigar by the way it feels. And this feels like a good cigar. But I ain't here to talk about cigars. I'm here to tell you that I'm gonna kill one of them kids.
Coming up after a short break, more with Ken Kwapis about directing TV pilots. You're listening to The Business from KCRW and KCRW.com.
Oh!
the Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Ken Kwapis is a director who moves from television to film and back again. His latest TV project is the new NBC comedy Outsourced, which he developed after he fell in love with a little-seen 2006 indie movie of the same name. Right now he's in Alaska, shooting the feature film Everybody Loves Whales, starring Kristen Bell, Drew Barrymore, and John Krasinski. Kwapis also directed The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, and He's Just Not That Into You. On the television side, Kwapis has earned a reputation as a go-to director for single-camera comedies like Malcolm in the Middle. He also directed pilot episodes of The Larry Sanders Show, The Bernie Mac Show, and the American version of The Office.
All right, Jim, your quarterlies look very good. How are things going at the library?
Oh, I told you, couldn't close it, so...
So you've come to the master for guidance? Is this what you're saying, Grasshopper?
Actually, you called me in here.
When working on the pilot episode of any TV show, a director has more influence than he or she might have when working on a series that's already established. After all, the pilot is where the template for the show can be set. Now, when you do a pilot, and, you know, obviously showrunners, producers, they're the writers, they're sort of the, you know, they're perceived as the authors mm-hmm. of these things. How much, what can you do? What can you bring to it?
Well, in some situations, a couple of key experiences I've had, the showrunner actually didn't have that much film experience. I've, by and large, done so-called single-camera half-hour shows that are shot basically like films. So, for instance, I directed the pilot of The Larry Sanders Show. And that was a case, and it had a very unique format where it combined both film and videotape because it was about a show that was within another show.
Right.
You know, it's Gary's vision.
Sure.
It's Gary's idea.
Gary Shandling, of
course.
Gary
Shandling. But I had kind of the unique job of trying to translate it in film terms because, his previous work was primarily on that, you know, fantastic Showtime series, It's Gary Shandling's Show, which is a multi-camera show about a multi-camera show. So Gary really wanted it to feel credible. He wanted it to feel real. He didn't want a documentary. He didn't want a mockumentary. But he wanted it to feel like we were, again, eavesdropping on the world of putting on this talk show. And so I feel like I was able to help translate that into cinematic terms.
So there are times when you look at the script and say, you know, it will not play the way you want it to play. I'm telling you as a film-based director, this won't work.
Well, yeah, and there's just as many times where I'm convinced that something won't play and the actors surprise me. So part of my job is to be surprised. The best experiences come when there's something on the page and you realize that actually what's going to make the scene come alive has actually nothing to do with the words on the page. That the words on the page are just kind of a little doorway to get somewhere else in terms of either the emotions or an image, you know. And that's when it's – for me, that's – in terms of my relationship with the showrunner, that's what's exciting. When the showrunner or the writer of that particular episode can say, oh, I never expected that.
Just to break it down a teeny more, they hand you a script. They say, will you direct this pilot? You look at the script and do you say, yep? isn't that simple?
Well, yeah, I feel like I've been blessed in that I've been able to help launch some shows that have unique aspects, like The Office. The Office, you know, clearly it's an adaptation of
the British
quite
series,
brilliant
yeah.
show.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we knew going into it, and I knew when I met Greg Daniels, who's the showrunner of The Office, that, you know, it wouldn't succeed unless it was unorthodox on its own terms. And so what appealed to me about the material was the possibility that it would look and sound and feel different than something else. Whether it's unique or straight down the middle, you're always, you know, comedy is, you're always courting disaster with comedy. It's not easy. And with The Office, we had so many things going against us, not the least of which was a lot of people saying, why would you possibly want to try and remake something so revered?
Right. I have to say I had an attitude coming in, but I lost it. I lost it pretty quick.
Well, to go back to the question, I read the script and all, you know, I felt very excited about that challenge. And so we, in that particular case, we also had the license to do unorthodox things when we did the pilot. During the shooting period, which was probably 6 or 7 days, I asked the cast to report to work at 7 o'clock and go to their desks and even if they weren't in a scene, to stay at their desks all day. And a lot of people said, well, the cast is going to mutiny. But in fact, it was the opposite. The cast so wanted to make that office their home. They wanted to figure out how to get into that space. And we didn't have any working phones on the set. They were dummy phones. But I encouraged the actors, particularly ones who had no lines in the pilot, Phyllis, Creed, to just just improvise sales calls. Now, by the way, I wasn't running film or anything. They just did it. And so the cast sort of kind of occupied the space for a week. I also kind of laid down a law that when we were shooting, it was just me and the camera operator and the sound person who could be there. So the actors really felt like they owned the space. I told the hair and makeup people that they couldn't come onto the set to do touch-ups. Instead, all the actors had little compacts stowed in their desks. So there was a sense by the end of the shoot period that the feeling when you see the pilot is it's a very lived-in place.
Right.
And we did some other unorthodox things. Each morning, we didn't start with the scene. I told everyone to get to work, and I just shot sort of, kind of general views of people at work for an hour or
business
so.
Business at work.
Just, yeah. Mm-hmm. And by the way, knowing full well that probably none of those shots would be in the pilot. But it was just a way to get them into a place where they felt like I was there to just kind of observe what's going on, as opposed to they're there to put on a show for me.
One of the things that has always fascinated me about The Office is those little moments where the person just looks at the camera and there's no speech at all.
Right.
How do you decide that?
Well, one of the things that people forget about the show is that apart from that little, ditty, that musical ditty under the opening credits, there's no music of any kind. So not only is it a comedy with no laugh track, there's nothing. I mean, there are great stretches of dead silence. And I think what we found in planning some of the scenes, I would often encourage the camera operators to actually, pan just late enough that they'd actually miss the spoken line. So they'd actually land, you'd pan from one thing to the next and actually land on an actor after they've said their line. So they're just there standing there. So it just made for this like weird, kind of cockeyed feeling. But to me, it's weird that that became like a signature of the show. People are staring staring kind of awkward, off at the camera.
So that was one of those accidents that are discovered in the course of the show.
Yeah, I think that, the premise of the show is that there's a documentary crew making
right,
a film.
Right, of course. The endless film. It's been going on for seasons
a long time now.
I
think that I felt like that show evolved in a kind of wonderful way. Oh, this is a small but important detail. This is something that Greg Daniels did, is that he managed to cast several of the writers in roles.
Right.
And so I think what it did to a certain extent is they got to know the other players better.
Right.
Especially ones who
not just improvise, but actually really know the characters.
And they could start to kind of build the – so suddenly when something like Phyllis's character or Creed, suddenly when those characters start to emerge, I think it happened very organically in part because there were writers there on the set all the time. They were playing characters.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for sharing. This is very interesting. Ken Kwapis is a film and television director. His latest project is the upcoming NBC comedy Outsourced. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Matt Holzman is the executive producer. The theme music mashup was designed by beat architect Jason Grohman. To leave a comment about today's show, email us at thebusiness@kcrw.org or go to kcrw.com/thebusiness, where you can also stream and podcast the show and check out past episodes. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.